thanks to the Waseca County Historical Society for having me down here. What I'm going to talk about today is conservation or preservation of your things. I'm a museum conservator, and conservators are trained to do preservation of collections that are in the historical site in the museum. And that could mean a wide variety of things. Some of the things we do are treatments, repairing, restoring, that kind of thing. Some of the things that we do are preventive measures, how to properly store things, and pest control, and environment, all kinds of things. But what I want to talk about today is about the things that you have brought. What we do in the museum may or may not be appropriate for you at home. And what I want to do is answer your questions about the things that you've brought. I'm going to try and make everything practical and straightforward. If I use words that somebody doesn't understand, if I forget myself and use some jargon, please somebody stop me and ask. I'm going to come down off the podium here in a few minutes, and I'm going to try and speak from down at floor level so I can move around a little bit. So I will try and remember always to speak up. If my voice drops, can't hear me, let me know. Lastly, I'm from New York. I grew up in New York. So, if I get talking kind of fast and can't keep up, let me know, okay? So, what I want to do is find out from folks what they've brought. And then we'll just kind of go around the room and folks will tell me what they've brought. I'll kind of organize that and we'll launch right in. I know that someone has brought a piece of marble sculpture down here on the podium, on the stage, that's become separated from its base, and I'll talk about that. But maybe we start over here on the right, and maybe the people at the table can just speak up and tell me what they brought for us to look at today.
Maybe brass, I'm not sure. Rock Hat, Alphol, Pat, Olivia. Don't know whether I should do anything with it or pitch it.
Okay, well, first of all, I said don't pitch it. And then we'll talk about what things that are what you might contribute. Okay, we have a carved wooden box that's probably miserable. Little piece up on the top and inside we have some paper. These are obituaries, okay? Okay, cool. Talking about wood. Okay, we're here at the office with all the members who are in the seventy. It's gold. On this pendant, there's a stone, several stones, sapphire, ruby color, diamond. Okay, gold's another easy one. Gold doesn't tarnish, gold's the most visible metal. Okay, and the Chinese hand puppet. Really interesting. Fabric, costume, maybe a wood head, maybe ceramic, sequins, and a variety of things, and just the news. Because the fabric is soiled, so we'll talk about that. And what should be done or not. Okay, what else we got? We have a meerschaum pipe. In a case, I'm going to pull this up carefully so that people can see. Anybody know what meerschaum is? Meerschaum is a clay. It's a very fine clay. Pipes were usually made of this in the 19th century, even in the 20th century. The interesting thing about meerschaum pipes is that as they're used, they slowly discolor. What happens is they pick up the yellow, and get a darker yellow color, which is just where we started here. They pick up, and what happens is they absorb the nicotine in the tobacco, so that the material might take it, and then eventually say, you get a smoother, cooler smoke from the meerschaum. Okay, so we'll talk a little bit about that. And it's in a case which has really done its job because it's protected the pipe, but the cases have had a rough fit. So we'll talk about that. The case is wood and covered with leather. Okay, I have a paisley shawl. And these are certificate, and also notice something else used to be here. I don't know what that was, but there used to be a strength and only enough piece of paper in there. It continued this coloration from that. And we'll talk about that briefly. Okay?
Right.
Okay, good.
I'm not sure what it is. The conservation of the technical side, I know it came across the ocean with rest of the planet. I cannot read it, and I've tried to kind of come with a neutral reading. And I have to read it, it's not confirmation of the religion. I have to read it, it's confirmation of the identification for voting the vote.
Okay. Okay, we have a very manual, a handwritten document, dated 1885, I believe. The 1885 date on it, and it has a red seal. And it's been folded and opened many times, kind of. And you can see that there's already some of the paper here.
Yes.
Okay, so we'll talk about that.
I just discovered that.
Okay. And what was it, in this leather wallet? Okay, I have a leather wallet with some more paper and it looks like some receipts.
Yes, those are old, those are the office.
Yeah. Okay, and we have some problems with this leather, so there's another leather item we'll talk about. Okay, what else? Anybody have a thing to say? The horse is known as Lobos Companion, joining the cavalry. I have a courageous friend, U.S. Army recruiting office. And it has two problems. I guess it's sort of a bit of a reward. Okay, so we'll talk about this. Paper. Okay, tarnished silver, another question. Photographs here. Okay, this is a tintype and a couple of other photographs. One of them here is a cutout oval, family a portrait mounted on a card, and two others. This one has the name of the photographer in Vermilion, Dakota. And once again, a couple more portraits of Celia Tully. And mounted on a card. Okay. Okay, you've got a ring with a carved cameo. Two different materials, a white material and a orange colored material. We'll come back to that too. Okay. This is a metal case. Really, it's pretty heavy. And it's got all kinds of decorations that have been added to it. And I think that this is something that was somebody made as they go along. And it has a newer mounting, but there are a variety of different things on here. Let's see, all kinds of different initials. What may have originally been a pin, a lot of these things may have originally been a pin or added to this case. I'm going to take a look at this under a loop, but the other thing I want to point out is this piece of elastic here that's losing itself a little bit. And there's a way that it hooks in. Anybody know what this case is for? It's cigarettes are falling apart. And look at this one, come back to it on the roof. Also, it's pretty loaded. The whole thing is going to have to be done. Okay. Is that it? Okay, let's see. We have photographs, we have paper, we have books, we have a variety of jewelry. We have a beaded vest. Okay, let's talk about the textiles first. Now, you can't see it, so I'll take my word for it. It's going to come up later and look. But the vest, which I'm not going to take out or unfold any further, the reason is that there are loose threads on here, and there are beads that are starting to come off. And the reason I first spotted that was because I can see there were some beads in the bottom. So one of the things you do here, there are two things that I would suggest. One is that the threads be stabilized so that more beads don't come off. We won't lose the beads, and we talked about that. This can be done by sewing. If, as I think this is a good enough condition, you use a thin thread and a very thin needle, and you go sort of tie off two existing threads where you can see that there's been a break that's come apart, and you lay your beads back in. There should be, if you look real carefully, there will be needle holes where the needle and the thread went through before, and you want to go back and reuse those holes rather than making some new ones. The other thing that I would suggest is that you change the box that it's stored in. This box is a sort of a gift box. And what I would suggest is that you change to an acid-free box. An acid-free box has the advantage, and acid-free tissue paper has the advantage that it's not going to cause discoloration to the fabric. Remember the book that I held up and you saw that rectangle of different color? That's called acid migration. If I had to take a guess, I'd say that there was a newspaper clipping that was into that. Now, newspaper is, after about 1850 or so, the lowest quality of paper made. Prior to 1850, paper used to be made out of rags, cotton. About starting around 1850, the need for paper grew so much that there weren't enough rags to go around. Techniques were invented. Some paper started to be made out of wood, ground wood. That has a couple of consequences to us now. The ground wood, the fibers are shorter and therefore weaker, and also wood contains a substance called lignin. And this lignin becomes acid, becomes acidic in time, so that the paper becomes acidic. When something is placed next to it, another piece of paper like in that book or fabric, then you can get this acid staining, causing deterioration of the piece that it's up against. Now, this piece is also pretty heavy, so it's not the kind of thing that you would hang, because I think it's too heavy to hang successfully. So I would put this in a box. I would open it up, put it in a dead acid-free box that was large enough so that it could be open full length. And then what I would do is I'd get some acid-free tissue paper and crumple it up, and on the sides here, what I would do is put the sort of sink of acid-free tissue along each side so that you don't get a sharp crease, so that you have a rounded fold. The reason for that being, what will happen to the fabric eventually is like it is very much what happened to that letter that I held up. The fibers will break along those creases, and the way to avoid that is to stuff things out, stuff fabric out with acid pre-tissue. This goes for other kinds of garments, christening gowns, shirts, jackets, dresses. We use a lot of acid pre-tissue paper to pad out this material. Okay, so we've got a little bit of repair work there, and we're changing storage. Now, just to get this over here, while we're talking about fabric, I want to talk about this cover. This is the one that is going to take down the top for a while. Probably going to have to stay. This piece is so, it has so much added to it in manufacture, so many things sewn on, that you really run into big trouble trying to disassemble it so it can be cleaned. The sequins are very likely made of gelatin, and if put in water, they would simply dissolve and disappear. So you can't wash this piece. So it's going to have to stay soiled like this, and the head is wood that's been covered perhaps with a gesso when it's painted. And the reason I know it's wood is the spot over here where the paint is chipped off, and I can see that there's a good grain underneath. Okay, now we had it stored on a stand, and a stand's not a bad way to go because this piece is still strong enough to stand up on the frame and support itself. I guess I would probably change the stand a little bit. But it's like so. Two things. One, you have a roll of wood, and two, it's a pretty narrow stick. And I'm guessing that you have a stand with enough to find the back. Okay. And I guess what I can do is put something a little bit wider up there and put some padding on top. Yeah, so what you have is a crossbar that supports your shoulders a little bit. That way, all of the strings can hang down without getting it squished down in the box. Now, do you have it out? Okay, hang down for 20 years.
Did you use a wire cutting?
No, well, I guess what if you were in the museum or you're going to have somebody make it, what I would make it out of is plexiglass, out of acrylic, because plexiglass is an inert material, and you can shape it, you know, like I did a rod, and I curve the end of sand, the end so that everything is round. Alternatively, you make something out of wire and hang it out. I'll show you what I mean by hanging it out. Yes?
You wouldn't hang it out.
No. If you picture this, and maybe we'll make this the miniature for your garments. We, in the museum, and also you do at home, I really recommend that you get rid of any wire hangers that you use. And wire hangers, of course, a sharp crease along the shoulder, and a lot of times on delicate fabrics, you'll see the ends of the wire hangers poking through the ends. What we use is a padded hanger, and you can take anything, a plastic hanger, a wire hanger, a wooden hanger, wrap it with polyester quilt fabric. You can get this pretty easily in most stores. You then take a piece of surgical stockinette, which is cotton stockinette, comes in different diameters, and you might be able to talk to doctors that give me a little piece of the room, a little bit. Available from medical surgical supply stores. You use that and take it and cut away on the washing machine and wash it twice. First time you wash it is to get all the sizing and the chemicals out that they put on at the factory so that it looks nice when you look at it and take it off the roll. The chemicals don't serve any purpose and potentially you may have something that's damaging. You wash it the second time with just clear water to make sure all the detergent gets out. Modern detergents, regular laundry detergents that we have, have been engineered to do certain things. They have all kinds of chemicals in them. They have perfumes, they have optical brighteners, they have all surfactants, just all kinds of things, many of which you don't need and you don't want left in the fabric. You know that clean smell that you get after you're washing or if you take off? Well, you're smelling that because there's some chemical that's in the fabric. Not necessary. What we use for washing, and what I would use in Vetus in our textile lab, we use a washing machine to wash these kinds of fabrics. We use something that's sold retail called quilt soap. It's a chemical soap, not actually a soap, it's a detergent. It's a neutral anionic detergent with sodium lauryl sulfate, or ORVUS, O-R-V-U-S. It's been sold for a couple of years as quilt soap, but if anybody here has or knows somebody who is involved with 4-H and show a sheep, this is what's used, ORVUS, for washing sheep before it goes to 4-H. And so you don't have to spend $5.50 for 8 ounces. Let's buy a gallon tub, it probably doesn't cost much more. We take a little bit and we put it in a jar because this stuff goes a real long way. If we wash something, we use 0.5% or 1%. So picture a sink full. You stick your little finger in up to the first knuckle, pull it out, let it kind of drip off. That's how much detergent you're going to use in a sink. A little bit, because if you use too much, you're going to have to keep on rinsing and rinsing and rinsing to get it all out. Okay, so I would make a cross brace up here, sort of a T-shaped stand, and I would pad it out and cover it with stockinette or something like that. You could, stockinette doesn't work, you could use muslin, white muslin. Not permanent dust, not bleach. Okay?
Now,
I'm sorry? Yes, this is a puppet, it's a hand puppet. And the question about if after 20 years is something that we've talked about for a lot of different things. Because light is going to cause this to continue to yellow and damage the fabric as much as it does paper over time. So, if I were to have this out, I would have it out sometime and not sometime. And I would be careful about where I display it. You wouldn't want it in direct sunlight. You don't want it under fluorescence because that has a high ultraviolet component. And you don't need the UV in order to see things. What we do, and I suggest this to people, is that you rotate things. Put it on display for a while, enjoy it, and put it away out of light for a while. Alternatively, you could, put a cover over it and so on. But, for example, if you have it sitting out and there's nobody at home, it's getting exposed to light and nobody's there to see it. It's unnecessary exposure. Okay? So, lots and lots of hours where you're not seeing it, but it's getting exposed to light unnecessarily and causing damage. It's cumulative over its life.
You put it under glass, put like a glass dome.
You can put it under a glass dome that serves the purpose of keeping dust off and perhaps kids' fingers when they come to visit, but it doesn't serve any other real purpose.
That's what they have there, huh?
Well, you want a fireplace that's dimly lit, but enough so that you can enjoy it, and I suggest not on top, not on the mantle, over the fireplace, so you don't have to deal with the heat and possibly the smoke or soot from that. I'm going to hold this up one more time. She, it was kind of discolored like this when she bought it, and I want to show you what light damage looks like. This is the piece where it was covered. Okay? I think everybody perhaps even in the back of the room can see the difference here. I don't think so. I think it's a fine epoxy. Because something exposed to this much light as the silk would probably be shredded and fallen apart. If the silk is the most light sensitive of all the fibers. Okay. Over the textile, that case is shawl. And here, we have the beginnings of the deterioration.
Okay.
So, you can instead of a cedar chest, I would change it to a different kind of box. And I would say, I would say, after you keep up your family class, and if you want to have a new wall of pillow case, you would put an old sheet, cotton sheet, in pillow case, if you're going to do something to that here. But you're going to bring more to the family, you're going to do it.
Well, I would.
There's a difference between a conservator and a curator. Okay, the curator knows where it came from and what it is and so on. The conservator fixes it. I would say that this is easily I think it's about the 20th century level. And it were made way back slowly, and the number of students is already used in the schools. And it would be, any other way, we would be a flex for it. And they were made elsewhere, where the law was copied. And you'll see some of them are rolled back and open like this, and you'll see others that are printed.
What's going to happen to those fibers as you manipulate it when it's wet.
If we were to wash a white thing like a christening gown or a white tablecloth, we'd use the Orbis. The way we do it is we, first of all, use the largest container possible, which so that we could lean things out and open it up, which of course is going to be a real problem with the tablecloth, and I'm going to be able to do that. But picture a christening gown. Okay, we could use a large tray. We'd use, first of all, since it's white, don't have to worry about colors running. You have to look at the fabric and make sure that it's sturdy enough to do that. What we probably would do is get a tray, put some water in it, put a screen, which is like a nylon screen, in it, put the garment down on top of the screen, and wet it all up. After it's all wet, you grab the screen and you lift the screen. So you're not picking up the garment, you're not worrying about having something come apart in your hand. Drain it off, fresh water, a little bit of Orbis, back in, a little bit of hand agitation, let it sit for 15 minutes or so, and then pull it out and start rinsing. And keep on rinsing until the water is clear and there are no more suds. At that point, you take it and lay it out and start tamping it dry. White towels, white paper towels even. Now in the last rinse, depending upon the water, the last couple of rinses, we would be using fairly pure deionized water. We call it well water, tap water. You've got a variety of things. Chlorine, for one. You've got metals. You can have iron in the water from the pipes. You don't want any of that left in the fabric and cause it a stain later on. So we end up using deionized water. Okay, so we rinse it, take it out, lay it out on towels, tamp it dry, and get it as dry as we can. Then we would take our screen again, and we would have it on a frame, stretch it between, say, a couple of tables, and lay the garment on the screen. Lay it out, get rid of as many creases as possible so it's all aligned, and perhaps take a little bit of like a nylon net, netting, tulle, wedding veil kind of stuff. Get some of that, crumple it up, put it in on the side, so once again, you don't have a sharp crease on either side. You have that nice rounded thing. And you let it air dry. You probably put a fan in the room to move the air. You don't want it blasting on the piece, but you want fresh air, you want it turning over and so on. When it is dry, take it out, make sure that everything is as you would expect, and then store it. Once again, here, we take some acid-free tissue, put it inside, put it in an acid-free box. I would store it the same way. I wouldn't necessarily wash it. I'm sorry? Okay. Well, it'd be a little gentler if you just use the tray and the cleaner, wouldn't it? Okay, I mean, depending upon how heavy and what kind of condition, I can remember seeing all kinds of things that wouldn't survive the machine. You don't use the machine except for the muslin and the stockinette and the towel and things like that.
That's obviously the spirit.
Right. Well, once again, storage, acid-free tissue, acid-free boxes. Now, acid-free boxes, I don't know if you're selling them here at the museum, or there are companies now who sell all kinds of acid-free materials. Here's a list of suppliers. A lot of them have 800 numbers, and if you call 800 number, they'll send you a catalog, and you really have to send you a catalog. And you'll see from these catalogs that there's all kinds of things. I've got a couple of catalogs here I'll read out so you can kind of peruse and see what I mean. Boxes of all kinds of sizes and so on. Now, okay, you've got the American product catalog, and I've got one there, a couple of other companies. And I'll leave this list out as well.
I only have two copies left. I messed up. I should have had more, so perhaps the museum can make some copies of this. You have a copy machine here? Would you make some copies? I'll make some copies so I can take one of these. Now, if you're going to go someplace, we're not sure whether you're dealing with acid-free materials, whether the box is acid-free, whether the tissue is acid-free. There's a pretty simple way to find out. Is to use one of these pens. It's a pH pen. It tells you when the pH or the acidity of paper is 6.8 or higher, it turns a certain color. If I take this piece of newsprint and I write on it with a pen, in a place that I haven't sprayed it, what I get is yellow color. If I take something that's acid-free and I write on it, you get a purple color. Now this is a permanent stain, so it's not what you use on your own. This tells you whether or not you're dealing with acid-free materials. Use it for checking mat boards. You go to a train shop and they say it's acid-free. You know, a little dot on the corner on the edge will tell you whether or not it is acid-free. pH pen. You can purchase those through the catalogs or